Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and winter doesn't seem to be quite over yet, but at least one long wait will soon be over for high school seniors anxiously checking the status of their college applications. Those thick and thin envelopes, well, it used to be thick and thin envelopes, maybe some schools still do it that way, filled with cushy acceptance packets or the sting of rejection letters. Now you also can get them by email. Some schools set up websites where you go and actually look yourself up. All of this coming anytime now to sting or enrapture many, many students. Application rates, by the way, are up across the country this year as more seniors apply to college, but it doesn't mean that there are more seats for next year's freshman class. Joining me now to talk about what's changing in this competitive college acceptance season is Jacques Steinberg, New York Times education writer who blogs for The Choice. He's also the author of The Gatekeepers, Inside the Admissions Process of a Premier College. Thank you for coming out from behind the 20 article paywall and joining us for free on the radio. Hi, Jacques.
Thank you very much.
As if this process wasn't hard enough, acceptance rates across the country are shrinking. Harvard's acceptance rate, to start all the way at the top, is just over 6%. 5 years ago, it was nearly 10%. University of Pennsylvania, also Ivy League, down to 12% from nearly 18% 5 years ago. Columbia saw an increase of nearly 35% in applications, I believe the number is, and yet there aren't more seats. So why are there more disappointed 18-year-olds moping around this spring?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to point out that there, you know, that we all define the universe sometimes, myself included, as very, very narrow. There's 2,000 four-year colleges in this country. Almost all of them accept well over half the majority of those who apply. And so it is entirely possible to get into a terrific college in this country without this kind of agita. That being said, as you have pointed out, every year, more and more of us, more and more of our children, descend on the same places. And yes, if it's this, the places you noted are their first choice, their second choice, their fourth choice, sometimes they are going to be disappointed. But nearly everyone gets in somewhere terrific. It always works out.
But if we are in the middle of an economic downturn, which obviously we still are, why are more 18-year-olds applying to college with all the expense involved? Is it just that we're in a little bubble and there are more high school seniors than there were a few years ago, or something else?
I think the number of seniors is starting to come down slightly. I think there's two issues. One is that the studies still show that if you have a four-year degree, you're going to certainly earn more over the course of your life and get a better job. Also, some of the schools you noted, counterintuitively, can be less expensive than a state university. These schools have really stepped up in recent years, the elites, and provided more lucrative financial aid packages, particularly to their most impoverished applicants.
However, as admission rates are dropping, tuition rates aren't for the average school. They're creeping up, at least on paper. Is this all an unreal system where, you know, the list price is just not the list price because of financial aid? Does it mean nothing if one school lists a $35,000 annual tuition and room and board, and another one lists 45 or 50?
I think the list price does mean something, and I think if your household income is above $100,000, you really start getting to that area where you are going to be paying the full sticker price at an institution that does not offer merit aid. And it's immensely unsettling to me as somebody who watches this process and cares about it, but also as somebody whose daughter is 5 years away from applying herself. I don't know where it's going to stop. I don't know how the middle class is going to be able to afford this sort of an education.
We've asked a million people this question in the last few years. Curious to get your quick response. What are the top three factors in the constantly rising tuition rates while prices on everything else roughly stagnate?
I will give you three factors. I don't know if they're the top three, but certainly, they're facing the same issues as other businesses. They are whole communities that have to feed and house students. They have to heat their campuses. They have to pay their faculty. They have to pay the retiree benefits. And so I think they've not necessarily been immune to anything that's been happening throughout the country. On the other hand, there is always this question. Do they need the climbing wall? Do they need the fancy gym and the fancy dorm? And I think in the next few years, you will see some of them starting to take courageous steps on that.
So all the students who have been rejected will never really find out what was wrong with their applications or with their inner souls. Morning Edition's Tovia Smith sat in with the admissions committee at Amherst College, and some of the reasons the committee gave for accepting or rejecting candidates were truly illuminating. Listen to this process in action.
He's a valedictorian. He started taking APs his freshman year. Fives in world history, bio, and U.S. history. Vice president of the National Math Honor Society. He's part of the Math League and the Chess Club. He's a tutor, a lab assistant, does community service. He writes a touching E1 about his work in pediatrics at a hospital. Overall, I like him.
Clearly a superstar. But he gets not a single vote.
Ha. Huh. One more. Another rationale for rejecting a student from the Amherst Admissions Committee.
I'm troubled by one sentence in the first essay. I rarely get truly fascinated with a subject. And then he goes on. Music is his exception.
What am I supposed to do with that?
My jaw dropped. I mean, that was flabbergasting.
Intellectual passion is a must, says Parker.
So what do we learn from those clips?
What we learn is that this process is not fair, and anybody who tells you that it is not telling you the truth. The fact is 85-90% of the kids who apply to a school like Amherst, who apply to a school like Wesleyan, where I spent a year in the admissions office as an observer, are perfectly qualified. And so they oftentimes have to come up with these crazy reasons. I don't like the first sentence in the essay. They have to find some reason to reject because they need to say no so many more times than they say yes.
That poor student seemed to just be expressing his passion for music, but they took it as a complete rejection of intellectual passion.
Look, it's they're grasping for reasons to say no, and sometimes I think really it might be better to throw all the files down the flight of stairs and see which ones travel the furthest. No one, and it's easy for us to say as observers, should put much stock in what this rejection or acceptance means about them as a person or as a student. How can you possibly?
And I guess, to sympathize for a minute with the admissions committees, if they have 1,000 slots in a freshman class and they have 5,000, 8,000 really, really good applicants who wouldn't be applying to that school unless they thought they could get in, then it's almost like throwing darts at a wall. I mean, some people you can make a judgment, and then some people it's obvious that you can eliminate or that you want, but then there must be a whole lot of people where they just have to kind of use their gut.
Look, terrific kids do get in, and my book is very sympathetic to the admissions officers and the fact that they bring so much of themselves to this process, and they do agonize over who to accept and who not to take. But they also have made a little bit of their own luck, such as it is, by beating the gushes, begging kids to apply. Mm-hmm. And so they are making their jobs a little bit harder, and that's a part of this process I've never quite understood.
Tomorrow we'll have Andrew Ferguson on the show. He's a senior editor at the Weekly Standard and author of a new book called Crazy You, One Dad's Crash Course in Getting His Kid into College. You interviewed him earlier this month, and you suggested that there's a lot more openness about the college admissions process now than there used to be. Do you think that knowing as much and yet as little about the admissions process makes it more stressful? Would it be better if we knew absolutely nothing at all and, the NPRs of the world weren't out there lifting the veil on what goes on at Amherst and stuff like that?
Look, I think it's always better to know and then to not know. We constantly publish these statistics like you had at the top of the segment on our blog, and people say, why are you telling us that Harvard's admission rate is 6%? Look, at least but again, it may sound Pollyannish. Everybody is going to get in somewhere terrific. If you've got a smart list, if you've spaced it out with some reaches, some middles, and some safeties, it's going to work out. And that's just not pablum. It really does.
Is the really big 30,000 feet above issue that we are trying to make a transition over a period of decades now to a country where college education is approaching universal?
Yeah, I think certainly that is part of it, and President Obama most recently has talked about it. But how do we disabuse ourselves of the notion that we all have to go to the same place or the same places? That's, I guess it's human nature, But we have to come off that notion, and I try as best as I can on the blog to do that.
I mean, the idea in the globalized economy is that the U.S. is going to be among the countries that has the educated workforce, because the other kinds of jobs are going overseas in large, large numbers. But we still have, what, maybe a third of the population that has a four-year bachelor's degree?
Yeah, and yet I've written for the Week in Review that we are also forcing kids to college who have no business being there, who have no interest, who would be better off getting some shorter-term training, whether at a community college or in a vocational program, and hitting the workforce rather than taking on these huge debts for an education they didn't want. So we have to grapple with that as well.
How do you know if you should go to a community college and save some money rather than trying to get into a private four-year?
Yeah, my colleague Ron Lieber on the Bucks blog took on that very issue this week, and it's a very, very personal question. But more and more kids across the country are taking 2 years of community college and then transferring to the bachelor's program, and you end up with the bachelor's.
Jacques Steinberg, New York Times education writer and author of the book, The Gatekeepers, Inside the Admissions Process of a Premier College. Thanks so much, Jacques.
Thank you.
And coming up tomorrow, we will talk to Weekly Standard editor Andrew Ferguson on his new book, Crazy You, One Dad's Crash Course in Getting His Kid into College, as we continue this conversation. More to come tomorrow on the big stories of the day and lots of other stuff, too. Hope to talk to you then. Thanks for listening today. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.